I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to Minute 79 of Season 6 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Bubba Leet of the Fight Club Minute. Welcome back to the show, Bubba.
Hello again.
Minute 79 begins with George gabbing with Harry and ends with the bank examiner becoming concerned. So yesterday we ended things with, George showing up at the billion loan and just taking a collect call from Harry, having a interesting conversation with him. And today we continue with that. So at this point, George says to Harry, you should see what they're cooking up in town for you. Oh, they are. And then he turns to Eustace and Tilly and says, the Navy's going to fly Mother home this afternoon. In a plane? What, Uncle Billy? Has Uncle Billy come in yet? Oh, he stopped at the bank first. He's not here right now, Harry, but look, now tell me about it. George. What? This man is here again. What man? The bank examiner. Harry, talk to Eustace for a minute, will you? I'll be right back. Well, Harry. So, I mean, again, this is an interesting conversation that they're having. You know, George is completely oblivious to the fact that there is a man sitting in his outside of his office waiting for something. You know, if someone is waiting there, and this is a very small business, it's not like you can automatically assume that whoever's there is someone who's going to be looking for someone else. You know, there aren't that many people to choose from that this person is waiting. But George, you know, he's single-minded and just thinking about his brother right now. Now, I love the way that it seems as if they're doing like a play-by-play here with the way that the conversation is going, because, you know, George is telling Eustace things that are happening and stuff like that. You know, he keeps looking over to him. And so it made me think about the idea of, play-by-play commentators in sports and stuff like that. And I found it very interesting. It's in sports, it's called play-by-play. In combat sports, it's called blow-by-blow. In motorsports, it's called lap-by-lap. And in cricket coverage, they call it ball-by-ball play. So it's just interesting, you know, that the idea is you need to be obviously very skilled to be able to constantly explain over the radio or over some sort of voice medium, you know, everything that's going on.
Yeah, and in movie podcast, it's called Minute by Minute.
That's right. Play by play, minute by minute. Especially on shows like this one where we actually tell you what's going on as it's going on instead of just discussing it. You know, it's also known as a color commentator. Do you know why it's referred to as color?
No, I don't.
So the idea of a color commentator is someone who will bring levity and insight as an analyst. So you have the person who's giving the play-by-plays, and then someone else who will give you insight into, they'll analyze the actual plays or things that are going on, stuff like that.
I guess you could have it described as like the one commentary is just giving you the rough outline, and then the color commentator is filling it in.
Correct. He's giving you more. The color commentator, I think, gives you more substance. You know, I guess it goes back to what we were saying about the minute by minute. You go deeper. The color commentator is the person who's going deeper into discussing things, as opposed to just giving you an overview of everything that's going on. I think that's the essential difference here. The conversation between George and Eustace to me gets a little funny because, you know, it reminded me of like Who's on First. You know, that man is here again. What man? The bank examiner. Oh. You know, it's like, obviously it doesn't reach the same level that Abbott and Costello reached on that. But, you know, you have the whole idea of Who's on First. Do you know when the idea Who's On First came around?
I mean, if I had to guess, I mean, based on that question, I would imagine that it might have been like part of their vaudeville act before committing it to screen.
Okay, I mean, it is something that was created in vaudeville and then in movies, even earlier, not just by Abbott and Costello. There are other people that use the idea of dialogue. For instance, you have a mythical kingdom that was known as what, and they say what is next to which, and what is the name of the town next to which? Yes, that type of thing. Different jokes in that revolved around people in schools. And they would say that there was a schoolboy named How who came from where, but he lives in Y. And How is Howe, where is Waare, and Y is Wye. So, they just got into this type of routine. And apparently, Bud Abbott started a baseball routine when he was doing vaudeville with someone else. And then once he teamed up with Costello, the two of them worked out the whole routine, which obviously has now become quite iconic. In I think 1938 is when they first started dealing with it. Then they kept polishing the routine over the years. So, for those who are unfamiliar, it's the whole idea of, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third. Actually copyrighted the routine in 1944 that nobody could take that away from them. And there was a movie that they were in 1940 called One Night in the Tropics, which features a shortened version of it. In 1945, there's a movie, The Naughty 90s, and that's where they full recording of it. Obviously they recorded it also in on radio and TV. They had a variety show that they would use it also, and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've definitely looked it up and listened to that and watched probably the full version. It's just incredible their timing, and you can tell that it's a duo that has practiced it and honed it to a fine point because it just is so rapid fire, and it just the timing and the delivery is absolutely incredible to watch and listen to.
Correct. No question about that. They even placed a gold record of it in the National Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. And they even had the video from the movie The Naughty 90s that constantly plays on screens in the Hall of Fame. There's a board game of Who's on First that was created in 1970. And in 1999, Time named it the best comedy sketch routine of the entire 20th century. In 2005, it was added to the AFI's list of 100 memorable movie quotations. But I think just the line "Who's on first," as opposed to the entire thing. So anyone who's never listened to it, I'm not gonna take away the fun of watching Abbott and Costello do it for you. So anyone who isn't familiar with this, or even if you are familiar and you want to go back and take a look at it, you can easily find on YouTube. Just type in "Who's on First, Abbott and Costello," and you will get one of the finest comedy routines ever done.
Yeah, I think a more recent spin on that surprisingly came from the Winnie the Pooh movie, like one of the more recent Winnie the Pooh movies, and they have a scene where Rabbit, Pooh, and Owl are stuck in the bottom of a pit, and at the top is Piglet with a bunch of short ropes, and they ask him if he can knot the ropes, and he says, "I cannot knot." And so it's this entire routine with the knot NOT and knot KNOT, and it's fun. You can find that clip on your YouTube too, and that's a fun little scene, and kind of a spin on the who's on first with the misunderstanding two homonyms.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of movies and TV shows and skits that just copied the whole idea. I mean, Johnny Carson had a spoof of Ronald Reagan that he did, which had a Hugh is on the phone. He was referring to a fictional Chinese leader, Cheng Deng-Hu, and then Reagan misunderstands references to the Secretary of the Interior, James Watt, thinking that they said what. And PLO leader Yasser Arafat keeps hearing as "Yes, sir." That's actually something I'd be interested to try to find. What movie is most famous for the idea of who's on first? What famous movie plays out who's on first?
I don't remember.
The answer is Rain Man.
Oh yeah.
Have you seen Rain Man? All right,
It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Right. So throughout the movie, Dustin Hoffman is quoting "Who's on First?" Probably the most common or the most famous rendition of it outside of them himself. There's tons of them that I found. Many of these that I see here on the list are from like TV late night sketch shows. Like Jimmy Fallon and Johnny Johnny Carson and a whole bunch of people like them that would do similar type of things. After this happens, so George turns to the man that is standing there and says, "Oh, good morning, sir." And the answer is Carter, bank examiner. Which is now he's just getting curt and to the point. And then he says, "Well, Mr. Carter, Merry Christmas." He goes, "Merry Christmas. We're all excited around here. My brother just got the Congressional Medal of Honor. The president just decorated him." "Well, I guess they do those things."
I love that line. It just shows him how no nonsense and humorless of a character this is. He could almost be like he's almost like a secondary villain to Potter, but of course he actually warms up at the end where Potter does not.
That is true. And he says, "Well, I trust you had a good year. Good year. Oh, well, between you and me, Mr. Carter, we're broke." Yeah, very funny. Well, and then George is a double take because he really was being serious and sincere. He goes, "Well, now come right in here, Mr. Carter. Although I shouldn't wonder when you're okay, reverse charges on personal long distance calls." "George, shall we hang up?" No. He wants to talk to Uncle Billy. You just hold on there. Now, if you'll cooperate, I'd like to." So my first question I mean, we could talk about this a little more tomorrow, but why is the bank examiner coming on Christmas Eve? What has inspired him that he has to show up on December 24th in the morning in order to be able to get home in time?
I mean, that's the about the only reason that I can think of is that it again, if you take a step back and think that this was all a plot from Potter, where I mean, he doesn't know, like he might know that the bank there that the building and loan is broke. Like I'm sure that he keeps tabs on them and just waits for any opportunity. So maybe he does know that they're not in the best place financially, and so he urges the bank examiner to come at this point in time at a critical moment, right, whenever they've had to pay this large sum.
Yeah, I would. There's no, to me, there's no other explanation. The idea is that this is something that Potter called up and says, "Oh, I think there's something wrong. You got to have some bank examiner come and take a look at it." I mean, the ironic thing of what's going to happen, in the future now, with this, the fact that the bank examiner really needs to be there, is I guess you're saying. It's lucky that the bank examiner is around for what's about to happen, because there is something that shouldn't be happening that happens. Now, the actor who plays Carter is an actor named Charles Halton, who was born in 1876 and passed away in 1959 at the age of 83. He's actually 70 years old here in this when in 1946. You'd think that even back then, by 70, someone would be retired. I mean, he doesn't necessarily look 70. He does look a little younger. He doesn't look like he needs to retire, let's put it that way. He has 204 IMDb credits, including roles in To Be or Not to Be. So, I mean, first of all, I think that's a hilarious movie. I mean, I like the remake, the Mel Brooks remake, much better, but still. So the original To Be or Not to Be was directed by Ernst Lubitsch, starring Carol Lombard and Jack Benny. It's the idea of a that the story is of a theater company in Warsaw, and how they deal with the fact that the invasion of Poland by the Germans, and then they find out that there is a German spy who has gotten information about people in the underground, and so this theater company group need to try to stop him from handing over the information about the family members of people in the underground and stuff like that. To me, both versions are hilarious because you have both Jack Benny and Mel Brooks at some point also playing pretending to be Hitler, someone who they both disdain, they have a lot of disdain for that, for Hitler. So he's in that. He's in Foreign Correspondent, which was a Hitchcock movie. He's in Shop Around the Corner, which is another Jimmy Stewart movie. And he also has a very small role in The Best Years of Our Lives, which was a Movies by Minute project. I mean, it's a movie that came out in 1946, but they also had a Movies by Minute project that was produced by Jim O'Kane. It was a group project that they did 3 years ago. And he plays a character named Prue. I wasn't able to figure out who Prue is. I don't remember. And I've seen The Best Years of Our Lives many times. I'm a big fan of it, but the character is a small character, and I just don't know who Prue is. Maybe if Jim is listening, maybe he can remember who Prue is. That's actually everything I have for this minute. Did you have anything else?
No, this is a pretty self-contained minute. It's mostly just a bit of dialogue. It's all right in the same room that we talked about yesterday. So yeah, I don't really have anything else.
The one thing I like about this is the fact that, as we mentioned, the Bank Examiner is a very by the book guy, and just doesn't have doesn't realize that George is not joking with him, and thinks that he is joking, and doesn't want to deal with those type of jokes. We don't need those jokes around here, that type of thing. All right, so every Thursday we have a segment called Jimmy Stewart Thursday, where my guests will give their top five Jimmy Stewart films. Now, I know he played a superhero, so you might have more than one entry this time. Maybe.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you, how many Jimmy Stewart movies do you think that I've seen?
I'm gonna say three.
You're not too far off, but I have seen exactly five Jimmy Stewart movies, so I am able
Oh,
to give
wow.
you
I'm
a
impressed.
full top five. And I'm gonna start out. Number five is Vertigo. I know that tops a lot of people's lists. It's considered one of the best movies of all time. I've seen it once, and it's been so long ago, I can't honestly remember that much of it. But I do remember that I liked the movie at the time, so I'm at least gonna give it the number five spot. Number four is Rear Window. That's just another fantastic Hitchcock movie. Jimmy Stewart gives a great performance, and you can't really say too much bad about a Hitchcock movie. And that is one of the better ones. Number three, I'm gonna go with this one. It's a Wonderful Life. I don't feel like I have to say too much more about it, because it's been covered plenty on this show. My number
I can't
two,
understand why.
my number two, I'm going to go with Rope. That's one that I covered on, my older podcast, Film Wise, and I watched that for the first time, and I really enjoyed it. And he plays a slightly different character in that movie, and just the whole single shot aspect of that movie is fascinating, and it's done really well for the time. And my number one Jimmy Stewart is Harvey. That is it's another movie that I watched once, and it's been a while ago, but I definitely remember that whenever I watched it, I just absolutely fell in love with that movie. It is just such a great and endearing and funny movie that it is really fantastic, and he plays the main character just so well that makes you believe that Harvey is really there. It's kind of like I feel like he plays a very similar performance as Bob Hoskins in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but the only difference is in Harvey, they're not actually animating Harvey.
Correct. All right, very cool. Thank you for the list. I'm glad that you had five to talk. It's always a plus. Always a plus. All right, great. Bubby, you want to once again tell people where they can find you?
Sure. I will once again plug what's I kind of feel like is the main project, the main podcast project that I'm working on right now, which is Fight Club Minutes. It's currently releasing 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Just like this show, I'm covering a movie 1 minute at a time, and I'm covering the 1999 film Fight Club with my co-host Lance Stanford, and we have a guest every week, and it's again it's been a lot of fun, and I'm also on Instagram where I'm at Bubba Wheat, and you can join that, and I share selected stills from the movie as they come out, and give a little bit of additional commentary on some of the stills. And there's a lot like that. That movie is really jam-packed. I know that you're not the biggest fan, but there is definitely a lot to talk about in that movie.
Yeah, for sure. Well, there's no question about that. But you know me, there's a lot to talk about in every movie. So it's not... It doesn't matter if it's a movie I'm a fan of or that I'm less of a fan of. It's you can always find what to talk about, which you and I both know I'm very good at. Especially when looking at triangles at the back of a buggy. There you go. All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Route Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movieroutminute.com. So, until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.